We've just experienced the New Testament Passover and Days of Unleavened Bread, the heights of the unique Passover service, the joys of the night to be much remembered. And both Unleavened Bread services have built up a strong desire to continue to overcome and be filled with God's Spirit in a new way. In this series of two sermons, I want to look at the experience of in the Old and New Testaments between the Passover and Pentecost. We're going to start today with the Old Testament experience. Remember, the Israelites were led by God into the wilderness. They ended up by the Red Sea. Then Pharaoh chased after them, and God protected the Israelites by a pillar of fire between them and the Egyptians. And it says, Exodus 14 verse 10, and it says, when Pharaoh drew nigh, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them, and they were sore afraid. And the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. The Israelites were terrified when they realized they were trapped between the Egyptians and the Red Sea. Moses urged them to stand firm and trust God. In verse 13 and 14 of Exodus 14 it says, and Moses said unto the people, fear ye not, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will show you today. For the Egyptians whom you've seen today, you shall see them again no more forever. The Lord shall fight for you, and you shall hold your peace. And God told Moses, verse 16, but lift up your rod and stretch your hand over the sea and divide it, and the children of Israel shall go through on dry ground through the midst of the sea. So God provided a way of escape for Israel, and he provides strength and deliverance for us throughout our trials, as you read in 1 Corinthians 10 verse 13. 1 Corinthians 10 verse 13. No temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man, but God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted above what you are able, but with the temptation will also make a way of escape, so that you may be able to bear it. He doesn't always give us an escape out of it, but he gives us strength so we can bear it. The Egyptians got into the seabed following the Israelites, and in verse 14, Exodus 14:25, they realized they were in trouble. They said, let us flee from the face of Israel, for the Lord fights for them against the Egyptians. The Egyptian army was destroyed when the sea returned. This means that Israel would enter the promised land with no militarily powerful nation behind them, ready to pursue them. Because if they were conquering the promised land and had a huge, powerful nation behind them, they were very vulnerable to attack. In fact, it took generations for the Israelites to recover their economic and military power. As a result of this victory, the Israelites were on high. They danced and they sang for what God had done. It says, thy right hand, O Lord, is become glorious in power. Thy right hand, Lord, has dashed in pieces the enemy. Thou stretched out your right hand, the earth swallowed them. Fear and dread shall fall upon them. By the greatness of your arm shall they be as a stone, till your people pass over, till the people pass over, which you have purchased. But the question is, would they remember this? The first crisis took place only 3 days later. In the wilderness, they reached a place called Marah, which you'll find in verses 22 to 24 of Exodus 14. And the water was undrinkable. And the people murmured against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" They had amazingly short memories of what had just befallen them. And remember, every time the Israelites have a problem, they had the fire of God in the daytime and the smoke of God at night with them every day to remind them. Do we have short memories on God's blessing and deliverances? Moses cried to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree, which when he had cast into the waters were made sweet. And in verse 25 and 26, it says, "There he made for them a statute and an ordinance, and there he proved them, and said, 'If you will diligently hearken to the voice of the Lord your God, and will do what is right in his sight, will give ear to his commandments, and keep all his statutes, I will put none of these diseases upon you that I brought upon the Egyptians, for I am the Lord that heals you.'" That's one of the names of God, the Lord that heals. God challenged them if they obeyed. So they travel on, and we move only two chapters further on, Exodus 16, verse 2. "And the whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness." They complained this time they didn't have any food. And you read some of the verses there, you'll find that their memory of the slavery in Egypt had changed. They thought they were better off in slavery. They seemed to have a faulty memory. Not only did they block out what God had done for them, they'd forgotten the bad aspects of their slavery. There was still no gratitude toward God. And God said unto Moses, verse 4 to 8, "Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain rate every day, that I may prove them whether they will walk in my law or no. And it shall come to pass on the sixth day they shall prepare that which they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather daily." So this was amazing bread. It was there for 7 days, but on the sixth day, as you'll see in verse 20 to 21, it only lasted for the day. It says, "Nonetheless, they hearkened not unto Moses, but some of them went left of it until the morning, and it bred worms and stank, and Moses was angry with them. They gathered it every morning according to his eating, and when the sun waxed hot, it melted." So they had to be out early in the morning getting this. "And it came to pass on the sixth day they gathered twice as much." And in verse 23 he said unto them, "This is that which the Lord has said, tomorrow is the rest of the holy Sabbath unto the Lord." Remember, they hadn't reached Sinai. They were already talking about the Sabbath. He said, "Sabbath unto the Lord, bake that which you will bake today, and seethe that which you will seethe, and that which remains lay over for you to be kept until the morning." And they laid it up till the morning as God Moses bade, and it did not stink, neither was there any worm therein. Not only manna was provided, but also quails were provided at this time. Notice that God provides the bread we need, the physical and spiritual bread. It says in John 6, verse 48 to 49, "I am the bread of life. Your fathers did eat manna in the wilderness and are dead." So we get our spiritual bread from God. So The journey continued. We go on to Exodus 17, verse 1 to 3. And in verse 1 it says, "And all the congregation of the children of Israel journeyed from the wilderness of Sin after their journeys according to the commandment of God, and pitched in Rephidim. And there was no water for the people to drink. Wherefore the people did chide Moses and said, 'Give us water that we may drink.' And Moses said unto them, 'Why chide you with me? Wherefore do you tempt the Lord?' And the people thirsted there for water, and the people murmured against Moses and said, 'Wherefore is this that you brought us out of Egypt to kill us and our people and our cattle with thirst?'" Yes, you can see him dragging 2 million people out against their wills, can't you? Again, the people complained to Moses over the lack of water. They ascribed motives to Moses. Moses was upset and cried to God. And he says, "Behold," God said, "Behold, I stand before you there upon the rock in Horeb, and you shall smite the rock, and there shall come water out of it, and the people may drink." And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. He was told to strike a rock to get water. God provides us with spiritual water. It says in John 7:37, "In the last day, that great day of the feast, Jesus stood and cried, saying, 'If any man thirst, let him come unto me and drink.'" So God provided food, and God provided water for them. And God, the food that God provided, he provided every day for 40 years. Every 6 day, there was double amount that lasted up till the 7th day. That happened week after week for 40 years. It only stopped on the day they entered the promised land. The next event was something that the Israelites hadn't planned for. In Exodus 7, verse 8 and 11 and 13, the Amalekites came up and fought against Israel, came as a surprise on Israel. "And it came to pass that when Moses held up his hand, Israel prevailed. And when he let down his hand, Amalek prevailed. And Moses' hands were heavy, so they took a stone and put it under him. And he sat there, and Aaron and Hur held up his hands, the one on one side and the one on the other side. And his hands were steady until the going down of the sun." Remember, Moses was 80 years old at this point, so physically it would be hard for him to keep his hands held up. This showed the complete dependence on God for deliverance in battle, and demonstrates to us our absolute dependence on God for overcoming. We cannot overcome on our own. Pastor Adrian challenged us to overcome in so many areas which appear to be so impossible. But this lesson to Israel shows that we must hold up our hands in prayer for help from God in order to overcome sin and to replace it with the spiritual gifts from God to thrive individually and as a congregation. We need to pray for each other and to pray that our congregation will be healthy and growing. Now back to the Amalekites. Notice that God declared war on the Amalekites because of this attack. For in verse 16, it says, "Because the Lord has sworn that the Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation." And this didn't come, God's judgment and God's punishment didn't come till the time of Saul. It's in 1 Samuel 15, starting in verse 2. Thus said the Lord of hosts, I remember what Amalek did to Israel, how he laid wait for him in the way when he came up from Egypt. And the result was the destruction of the Amalekites. God's judgment took time to come, but it did come, demonstrating God's long-term plans. We may forget, but God does not forget. The final event that took place before they arrived at Sinai was the arrival of Jethro, Moses' father-in-law. Remember, Moses had married Zipporah when he fled from Egypt in the wilderness 40 years before. Apparently, when Moses and Aaron went down back to Egypt, he left her and their sons behind. And he said unto Moses, this is Jephthah, thy father-in-law Jethro, am come unto you, and your wife and your two sons with her. So he was reconciled to his wife again. And Jethro, in Exodus 18, verse 12, it says, Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took a burnt offering and sacrifices for God. And Aaron came and all the elders of Israel to eat bread with Moses' father-in-law before God. So Jethro performed a sacrifice, which was the usual practice, as you'll see from the lives of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, before the construction and implementation of the tabernacle and the Levitical priesthood. That hadn't happened at this point. And it says in verse 13, and it came to pass on the morrow that Moses sat to judge the people, and the people stood by Moses from morning unto the evening. And Moses' father-in-law saw all this and said all that he did to the people. And Moses said unto his father-in-law, verse 15, because the people come unto me to inquire of God, when they have a matter, they come unto me, and I judge between one and another, and I do make them know the statutes of God and his laws. Again, this was before the giving of the law at Sinai. Jethro said in verse 19, hearken now unto my voice, I will give thee counsel, and God shall be with you. Be you for the people to Godward, that you may bring the causes unto God, and you can teach them their ordinances and laws. In verse 21 it says, moreover, you shall provide out of all the people able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness, and place such over them to be rulers of thousands and rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties and rulers of tens, and let them judge the people at all seasons, and it shall be that every great matter they shall bring to you, but every small matter they shall judge. So it shall be easier for you, and you, and they shall bear the burden with you. And in verse 24, so Moses hearkened unto the voice of his father-in-law and did all that he had said. He gave good advice, and Moses was humble enough to listen to the advice and take it. Hearing conflicts and giving judgment began at the most local level, nearest to the people involved in Israelite communities. Cases that were too hard were passed up the line of hearings until they were resolved, until they reached Moses, who took them to God. An example of this process actually is found in Numbers 27 verse 1 to 7, if you want to make a note, where God gave a ruling that in the absence of brothers, daughters could inherit family land, which would have gone to their brother if there had been one. In other words, every family was given a piece of land when they arrived in the promise in Palestine. And if there were only daughters in the family, it could have gone out of the family, going to a relative. But this ruling meant that the daughters could inherit the land. This system of judging through stages as a faint echo in the American and Canadian court systems. The Jews estimate that for the 2 million people, that between 78,600 and 129,860 would have been judges at various levels, because you remember it starts at groups of 10. Later in Numbers 11, verse 16 to 23, God gave his spirit to 70 leaders to help Moses in the administration of the nation of Israel. Moses was coming to realize that he could not do it all on his own. Even Jesus Christ had 12 apostles to help him. In our church, the ministers, the pastors, and leaders in the church cannot carry out the administration of the congregations all on their own either. They are helped by people who are led by. They need help from people who are led by God's Spirit. As the gifts of God's Spirit are identified, people become involved, and they too cannot carry out on their functions alone. We all need God's Spirit to remain humble and effective as servant leaders. Notice that Apostle Paul depended on Timothy to help with the encouragement of the brethren. In 1 Thessalonians 3, verse 2, and he says, "And sent Timothy, our brother and minister of God, and our fellow laborer in the gospel of God, Christ, to establish us and to comfort you concerning your faith." You remember also when the apostles, when the church was first started, the apostles had to appoint deacons because they couldn't manage the preaching and the administration of the church at the time. While Exodus covers the journey to Sinai, the book of Numbers covers the rest of the journey. We've reached Sinai, but I want to present a scenario at this point, which means briefly talking about what happened after Sinai. At Sinai, Israel was given God's law, the priesthood, the sacrifices were established, the tabernacle was constructed, the nation of Israel was organized, ready for their entry into the promised land. Our congregation is also becoming organized in preparation for God and Christ to use us. Now, Israel arrived in Sinai at the time of the Feast of Weeks, which is Pentecost, in the first year. They left Sinai in the second month of the second year after taking the first wilderness Passover. During this next journey, the 70 leaders were appointed. The people were fed with quails, and many died after complaining about lack of food. They were fed up with manna by this time. Then Miriam and Aaron rebelled against Moses, and Miriam got leprosy as a result and was put out of the camp of Israel for 7 days. This demonstrates to us that rebellion is a serious matter in God's eyes. This does not mean that honest concerns, questions, suggestions should not be aired, discussed, and changes made. The attitude makes the difference. Now we come to Numbers 12. The Israelites were in the wilderness of Paran. It's somewhere north of Mount Sinai, but south of Palestine. We're not quite sure where. But at this point, it was time for Moses to send out people to search the land. In Numbers 13, verse 1 and 2, "Send thou men that they may search the land of Canaan, which I give unto the children of Israel, of every tribe of their fathers. Shall you send a man, every one, a ruler among them?" So 12 spies were sent into the promised land to gather information about the people and the land. It took them 40 days. And in verses 23 and 24, says, and they came unto the brook of Eshcol, and cut down from thence a branch with one cluster of grapes, and they bare it between two upon a staff. And they bought of pomegranates and of figs. Notice what they brought back. Grapes, pomegranates, and figs. All these plants bear fruit in the fall. The fig trees actually also produce figs in the spring. Hence Christ's disappointment at finding no figs at the Passover time. This meant that the Israelites would have entered the promised land at harvest time. Their enemies would have provided the food to take them through the winter. It was a perfect situation for the Israelites to have immediate food planned for God. This was God's plan. If they'd obeyed him, they could have entered the promised land in the fall with plenty of food and resources to manage. However, after 40 years in the wilderness, Israel actually entered the promised land in the spring, which was not God's original plan. They would arrive without food available. The people in the land would have been coming to the end of their stores of food. This was part of the consequence of their parents' failure to enter the promised land when it was planned. Now, the majority of the spies' reports focused on the negative, but the men that went up with him said, "We be not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we." Therefore, the people of Israel failed to trust God. Leadership is important. And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night, and the people, children of Israel, murmured against Moses and against Aaron, and the whole congregation said unto them, "Would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God that we had died in this wilderness. Therefore has God brought us unto this land to fall by the swords, and our wives and children should be prey. Were it not better for us to return unto Egypt?" And they said one to another, "Let us make a captain, let us return unto Egypt." They did not trust God. They wanted to die in the wilderness or go back to Egypt. They were in rebellion. On the other hand, Joshua and Caleb, the faithful spies, pointed them to God, to good things in the land, and to God's power. They spake unto the company of the children of Israel, saying, "This land which we pass through to search is an excellent, good land. If the Lord delight in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only rebel not ye against the Lord, neither fear ye the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their defense is departed from them, for the Lord is with us, fear them not." And at this point, God was really getting fed up with the Israelites. He says in verse 11, "And the Lord said unto Moses, How long will this people provoke me? How long will it be ere they believe me, for all the signs which I've showed among them?" It was at this point that God wanted to destroy them, and he offered Moses the opportunity to be founder of the new nation. But Moses pleaded with God for the people of Israel. Moses was a true and faithful leader. He wasn't there to get power. Verse 28, saying to them, "As I live, said the Lord, as you have spoken in my ears, so will I do to you." The people of Israel who rebelled were condemned to die in the wilderness. And in fact, the spies were promptly killed by God. The overall lesson from the Israelites is found in Hebrews 4, verse 1 to 4. They did not have faith to trust in God. At this point, God was aware of their lack of faith. It said, verse 1, "Let us therefore fear, lest the promise being left us of entering into his rest, any of you should seem to fall, come short of it. For unto us was the gospel preached as unto them. But the word preached did not profit them, not being mixed with faith in them which heard it. For we which have believed do enter into a rest, as he said, as I have sworn in my wrath, if they shall enter into my rest, although the works were finished from the foundation of the world. For he spake in a certain place of the seventh day in this wise, and God did rest the seventh day from all his works. The question for us is, do we trust God to obey and grow spiritually? Seeing verse 6, seeing therefore it remains that some must enter therein, and they to whom it was first preached entered not in because of unbelief. In verse 7, again he limits the certain day, saying to David, today, after so long a time, as it is said, today if you will hear his voice, harden not your hearts. Verse 11, let us labor therefore to enter into the rest, lest any man fall after this same example of unbelief. We can follow the example of Joshua and Caleb, who remained faithful and enter the promised land 40 years later. These events were examples for us as to what not to do, and they point us towards dependence on the power of God. And as I say, they had physical evidence of the power of God every single day, in the smoke and the fire and in the bread. We need to be sure we do not take the short-term view in our lives, our trials, our challenges, but put our trust fully in God. As Paul says in 1 Corinthians 10, verse 11, now all these things happened unto them for examples. They are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come. I pray that you will be blessed and grow as individuals and as a congregation.